Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
And get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No, I'm...
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap?
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Welcome along to Monday Night Rugby. It is time for us to have a look back at a weekend which saw the start of the Rainbow Cup, which is being played in two different hemispheres separately now at this stage. But on the pitch, Munster snapped their six-game losing run against Leinster. A late try from Peter Sullivan gave Connacht a win away from home against Ulster. And Emily Murphy-Crowe, who we spoke to in the last hour, scoring two tries for the Irish women's team as they beat Italy by 20 points to secure a top three finish in the Six Nations. For Leinster now, attention moving towards playing against Ron Nogara's La Rochelle this weekend in the Heineken Champions Cup. To look back and to look forward on all the rugby action, delighted to say we're joined by former Ireland captain Brian O'Driscoll. Brian, good evening to you.
Good evening, Will. How are you?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. You know, sun's out, golf courses are open again. Really can't complain.
Yeah, I know. I'm looking forward to getting out and hitting a few balls to other fairways now and next week sometime. I think I'm booked in for Friday week, so yeah, hopefully the weather, well, I know it's meant to turn now, but hopefully it picks back up again by then.
Are you concerned about the shape your game might be in when you get back out?
Yeah, of course, but like my pitching game couldn't be any worse, so I'm hoping that whatever 6 month layoff is going to have done wonders for it, that I, you know, start afresh and forget all the horrors. So I'm not like overly concerned about the tee. It's usually something I can rely on, and then the irons take a while to go get going. Short game's been toxic for years, so I don't expect that to be a whole lot different.
Well, look, things are a bit different for Munster in terms of taking on Leinster. The last 10 games haven't been too kind for them in terms of the meetings, but particularly, you know, that was the seventh game they've played against each other since last August. They've become really familiar opponents now, not too long after the Pro 14 final, which Leinster had won at the RDS too. And you know, Peter Manny was saying after the game, like, forget about shadow sides, forget about how important or unimportant the fixture was. It was important for Munster to actually end that losing streak at the weekend.
I totally get that. You know, it was, yeah, I think when, you know, when there's a, you know, listen, we all know the history between these teams, and to go, if either team goes six games with six defeats, it's embarrassing, irrespective. And I don't know what sequence we would have been involved in back in the noughties, but I'm sure we probably got up to 3, 4, 5. And it is, it, you know, you take it as a personal slur. And they answered, you know, in game seven with a pretty impressive kind of all, what's the best term? Kind of all-conquering performance in every facet of play. Granted, yeah, it was the Leinster second slash third team even potentially, but that didn't matter. It's sometimes about getting a win and then the manner in which they did it as well. There was a nice bit of niggle in the game. They really had a proper go at Leinster. It was kind of Munster of old, really made it awkward at the ruck. They, you know, gave Hugh O'Sullivan a torrid time. Their line speed, they didn't even think about drifting. They were just firing up, getting in the eye line of the halfbacks. And it just didn't look like the Leinster that we have seen this season because they weren't allowed play. So, yeah, very, you know, impressive performance from Munster, and I'm sure they'll be glad to get back to trying to build on that now.
If there was ever an image, Brian, to sum up the fixture that we saw on Saturday evening, it was probably Craig Casey squaring up with Scott Fardy towards the end of the game. You know, he gives up probably more than a foot on him, but Craig Casey wasn't taking any steps backward.
Yeah, I presume that there was a lot of that conversation during the week that, you know, they've been out-muscled by Leinster. You tend not to win those games unless you get out or unless you out-muscle the opposition. And so for six in a row, have they been out-muscled? Well, certainly in three or four of them, I can think of that. There's one down in Thomond where they had a lot of the play. And then, you know, was it the Hugo Keenan, Jordan Larmour try kind of against the run of play a little bit. Maybe that broke the mold slightly, but for the most part, they've been dominated physically and dominated in the collision zone and at ruck time. So I think that is that's the bread and butter of Munster rugby. That's what they grew up on. That's what they've enjoyed watching for the last 20 years. And so when you're not able to or haven't been able to deliver that, I think you've got to have a real chip on your shoulder. And just all of the 50-50s, they seem to win them all at the weekend. You know, kick contests, ball on the ground, scraps. They're the non-negotiables that you associate with Munster. But, you know, Leinster have had the upper hand in that regard in recent outings. So they kind of put that all right and took their opportunities very well. You know, couple of different types of scores, obviously the turnover and a really nice length of the pitch one for Conor Murray's first, and then, you know, the quarterback sneak for another one. So I think they can be very happy with their overall performance, and then not even letting Leinster in over the whitewash at all is pretty pleasing too.
Yeah, there won't be too many teams this season who'll stop Leinster from scoring a try. But imagine if you look at that Munster first try particularly, Brian, you know, the architect of it really is Tadhg Byrne at the entire other end of the field getting a steal, you know, one of the most important ones he had in the entire game. And then Munster showed great control to be able to work the ball up the other end. And then clinically, they were able to get over for a try. These are kind of the moments in the last few meetings between the two sides where Munster would get into the 22 and would sometimes run out of ideas. It was a different story last Saturday.
Yeah, and you know, Damien Delande, you know, he looked as though like good players have plenty of time on the ball, and you know, he almost, you know, allowed Jordan Larmour to decide what he was going to do defensively, and you know, he hedged his bets a little bit too much of staying out and not trying to tackle the ball. The ball is where the problem lies. So Delande, I suppose, tricked him into thinking, you know, with his footwork that he was going to go one way, and you know, nonchalantly kind of at 60% felt as though he's gliding. Even his initial break, the couple of passes, good quality passes, got out to the mismatch on Porter. It was a penny was chasing across from the far side and probably pushed a little bit too far, knowing that his tight head prop was inside him. He could have given a little bit more security. But then Delande handed Porter off, and then, as I said, that slalom run, and then a beautiful offload on the inside to Conor Murray, who was running the stereotypical Antoine Dupont line or Conor Murray line that we would have associated a few seasons ago that we haven't seen a huge amount of in recent times. But good to see him back on the score sheet and playing with lots of confidence. And then the second one, just the bludgeon. You know, it's something that maybe Leinster have really mastered in the last few years of, you know, once they get into the opposition's red zone, get close to the opposition try line, they tend not to come away very often without scores. And Munster managed to do that really well. It's about accuracy at ruck time there. And we talk about the ball carrier, that 60% man, which is a Joe Schmidt-ism, where he fights on the ground and gives that good target. But that's where you're sometimes at your most vulnerable, where the opposition are desperate to get the ball back because they're defending, you know, like their lives are dependent on it. And so the accuracy was excellent, but it was all to do with the ball carrying collision winning that gave that platform for Murray to get in. So two very different scrum half tries, but clever in both regards.
From Leinster's perspective, Brian, I guess there was two important things. Getting game time for some players who maybe weren't playing a huge amount, and they're coming up to nearly 60 players they've used now for this season, but also bringing some players back who they're trying to get sharp now for the run-in for the rest of the season. I'm sure they'd be delighted that Gary Ringrose got out and got some action ahead of La Rochelle, probably disappointed that Caelan Doris picked up an unrelated injury and wasn't able to play. That's basically all Leo Cullen could really take from a positive point of view from last weekend, is that, you know, some players like James Ryan and Gary Ringrose got back out onto the field.
Yeah, I think so. You know, he obviously would be disappointed with the team performance that they weren't able to react to the massive line pressure, defensive line pressure that was put on them. I think you probably saw a little bit of immaturity and lack of experience at halfback, which is you know, it's not surprising considering how few times the two lads, particularly when Harry Byrne went off, how little those two guys would have played A, together, or B, even in a Leinster team against that quality of opposition. I suppose sometimes you need to you know, had defenses second guess themselves, and it felt as though they were crying out for a little dink or two in behind just to check that defensive line to keep them honest, because Munster were flying off the line, and Hawkshaw, it looked at, you know, so many occasions that he had to either catch and stand and pass to get the ball out, or he came back inside an awful lot because he got spooked from the outside. And credit to Munster's defence, I thought it was very impressive. You know, Farrell was really good at that. Earls was very good at it as well. D'Alande loves playing hard up and getting in your face and smothering you. So it just felt as though, from Hawkshaw's point of view, that he didn't have any time to pull the triggers on any of their plays. There was very little platform initially at the ruck, and so O'Sullivan was getting scragged, and his quality of possession was poor initially, and then he was passing on, you know, I suppose, negative ball. And it just felt as though, you know, a cool head, maybe someone that had been there a few times, would have understood of just dink a ball in behind and just make them think, you know, they don't have all front foot defense, that they have to play on their heels sometimes, with the knowledge that someone's got to control that backfield, which I don't think at any stage in the game it seemed tested.
Disappointing for Harry Byrne as well, Brian, given that it has been so many occasions this season where it looks like he's coming in for a big game in Europe this year. He picks up a knock in the warm-up, doesn't get to play, his brother plays ahead of him. This time around, he doesn't get to play a full game against Munster, which would have been a good experience for him. You'd feel from having to go off quite early in the game, we didn't get to see what he's capable of.
Yeah, and listen, no one more than me was banging his drum earlier on this year. It just felt like we should get very excited about him as a player, but the reality of professional rugby is so much of it is putting yourself in a position to get your opportunity, but then taking your opportunity. And it felt as though he missed a massive chance in that Northampton game. If he could have put in any sort of half-decent performance, he was selected ahead of his brother, whether that was on form or just to try him out in a big European game, I'm not sure. But it felt as though a lot was lost there, because Ross has come in and subsequently done very well, and no more so than in that Exeter game, and well and truly established himself as number two in the pecking order behind Johnny Sexton. But for him to go off again, another high-end game against, you know, better opposition, you know, I think Harry would probably have played in a number of games against kind of lower seeded or lower tiered teams within the Pro 14 and now in the Rainbow Cup, but to get the opportunity to play against a quality side like Munster gives you a chance to pitch yourself against better players, and you know, there's increased mind games involved in that, and you have to strategize a little bit better, where, you know, he only unfortunately lasted 5 minutes of it. And yeah, it's bitterly disappointing for him, because there's no doubt he still has huge potential. It's showing, but with every time that you limp off or that you don't get to you know, see through a game, someone else gets a chance. And as we've seen, his brother has taken those chances very, very well when he's stepped into Johnny Sexton's shoes.
I don't mean to turn you into a referee here, but when it came to the Stephen Archer incidents, particularly the stamp on James Ryan, should the colour have been red as opposed to yellow?
I don't know. Like, we've outlawed that, right? Because you know, it's aesthetically a terrible thing, and you can injure someone. I think if that's, you know, it's really stupid of him, first of all. You know that the stamping's not allowed, or rucking, as he will say that it was, but you know, rucking backwards, no matter what the motion is. And if you stand on a joint, you know, I think the likelihood is that you're going to get a red card because of the dangerousness of that. But he's, you know, he stood in where the sun doesn't shine, or certainly appeared to be with James Ryan, which is obviously very serious in itself. So that could have brought a different colour card because of the seriousness of where his boot ended up. But, you know, I guess I don't want to see red cards, you know, given away for things that maybe were part of our game 10 years ago, although they're being banished now. It didn't feel for me like it was a red card incident. And I know some people will be horrified to hear that. I think it's a yellow card. It's stupid, but it's not a sending off offence in my book.
Before we look ahead to La Rochelle against Leinster, just for Munster for the rest of this competition, you know, two more interpros to be played because of the way that this competition has been restructured. If you're Johan van Graan and Stephen Larkham, are you thinking this is a chance now, albeit it's a massively lessened competition because of the format, that Munster should now be looking to win?
Well, they're in it, you know. Of course, they're definitely going to want to win it now. And it's something at the end of a season. Yeah, it's a completely different version of what they'd anticipated. It's very samey, to be honest with you. And it'll feel like it's kind of Pro 14 Part 2, where, you know, similar opposition. And but yes, you know, they've gotten a big scalp early on, one that they struggled with, and so. You know, if you're going to be in it, you're going to be playing the games. You don't play to place, you know, for second place. You play to win. And if they could manage to grind out enough performances to win a trophy at the end of the season, well, you'll take it ahead of not taking a trophy. And that's the simplicity of it. There's not a huge amount at stake. The reality of it is, and it's very hard to get excited about this Rainbow Cup, but. Nonetheless, if you put yourself in a position with decent performances, it gives you, you know, that confidence going into preseason next year that you are building, that you're getting better. You know, conversely, if they you know, had a poor performance at the weekend, lost again and lost momentum, it's harder to kick back to where you want to be come preseason. And it does feel as though, you know, with that performance, with Orgie Snyman coming back, with, you know, the other South African second row, whose name escapes me, coming in, it does feel as though they are putting together a team capable of getting to semi-finals and finals. I just don't know if they've quite got the secret sauce yet. They also need Joey Carberry to be firing on all cylinders again next season, which, understandably, he's not there yet, far from it. So it feels as though he's kind of 3 or 4 months away from getting back to top form with full match fitness. So there's lots of different factors coming to play here. But if they're in it, they will 100% feel as though it's a positive stepping stone towards achieving something next year if they manage to win the Rainbow Cup.
Well, our rugby coverage here on Off the Ball is with thanks to Vodafone, Team of Us, everyone in. Looking ahead to Europe this weekend, and in terms of the Heineken Champions Cup, you've got La Rochelle against Leinster. We had Ronan O'Gara on OTBAM last Friday. He was saying his family are happy in France. He feels very much at one with the owners in terms of what La Rochelle want to achieve. So he was more than happy to put pen to paper on that new 3-year deal. With John O'Gibbs making his way to Clermont Auvergne, Ronan O'Gara is going to have an increased brief. Is he going to increase his skill set now, given that he's not just going to be looking after training on the pitch, Brian, but also he's going to have a much bigger role in terms of behind the scenes at La Rochelle from next summer as well?
Well, yeah, it certainly appears like it. You know, it when you go into a different role and there's more asked of you, obviously you either... you either take on more hours, which I'm sure he's, you know, I know he's giving everything he has from that regard, or you delegate some of the responsibility out to others and you bring in, you know, good quality coaches that you feel are able to implement your message as well. So it's a tricky one. I think as well, you know, so much has been said of Ronan O'Gara, and he's clearly developed as a brilliant coach and a real thinker, and he gives phenomenal sound bites, you know, after games and in his punditry, and it's so interesting listening to him. I think we have to pay a little bit of respect to John O'Gibbs as well, as the coach that he was, the success that he had at Leinster too, and how Clermont are mad keen to have him back. The quality of rugby that Clermont were playing when John O'Gibbs was there first time was pretty phenomenal at times. And and obviously he has a real grow for the club, and maybe I don't know, you know, does he feel as though he wasn't getting the credit that he deserved in La Rochelle? I don't know what his thinking behind going is, but it felt as though, I'm sure there was a lot of quality thoughts from both John O'Gibbs and Ronan O'Gara, and now Rog is going to have to go and develop, you know, his own head coach or his own coaching ticket, whether he keeps on those that are still involved or brings in new people will be really interesting to see. But I do feel as though it's been very much from an Irish perspective, Ronan O'Gara's La Rochelle, when John O'Gibbs is still in as director of rugby role and must have had a huge say. And indeed, you know, the you know, combination with Rog has obviously produced this quality display that we've seen from La Rochelle over the course of the season.
The other thing we're probably guilty of here is to say, surely Ronan O'Gara is going to end up back at an Irish province or taking an Irish gig at some point. Like, Ronan O'Gara has had no problem clocking up the air miles and going to New Zealand and having a couple of spells at different clubs now in France. I don't think Ronan O'Gara is necessarily in any rush, Brian, to come back and work in Ireland again.
Have you ever been in El Dorei?
Well, it's very nice. I've only ever been there once, and you've got the Atlantic coast. I saw images of the last year's Tour de France, which went right by Ron Nogara's house. Not a bad place to be.
Yeah, like, listen, I know there's no place like home, and you know, Roger, at some point we'll end up, be it in Cork or in Limerick. But do you know what? It's all right when the family's, you know, he's got five kids and a wife that are well settled there. They, you know, obviously are fluent French speakers. They, I'm sure, you know, probably think of themselves nearly more as French than they do English, English speaking. So I do feel as though that I can understand why he's gone and signed on for another 3 years. He's got the backing of, you know, the board in La Rochelle, or the owner, or he's playing. His team are playing a great brand. He's got some really clever players in key positions. It's a great part of France. Like, what's not to like about all those things? You know, the Munster job will be there for him. He's, you know, Rog isn't going anywhere. He's continuing to build his coaching acumen, and if he manages to win this weekend, or he manages to win, a European Cup or a Bouclier in the next few years, his stock will continue to rise, and it'll be inevitable that, you know, Munster eventually will come looking for him. And when that time arises, I'm sure he won't be able to turn it down. But for now, with Johan van Graan in situ in Munster, and Rog very happy in La Rochelle. Again, I said it before, be careful how quickly you get to the top, to the job that you want to get to, because there's a finite period of staying there too.
Well, La Rochelle are in a wonderful position currently. They're 5 points back in the top 14 race, but they do have a game in hand because they didn't have a game last weekend. They're coming into this game as well, Brian, on the back of what I thought was a really impressive performance at Kingsholm against Gloucester a couple of Fridays ago too. They'll be really fancying their chances this Sunday.
They will, and you have to remember, they are at home. That's like, that's a big thing. You know, Raj said when asked about it, he said, the big thing is getting pulled out, you know, one or three, and Lawrence Dallaglio managed to do that. Home advantage is a huge, huge thing. It's obviously way more beneficial when you've got your own crowd there and your own supporters, but the familiarity of all the things leading up to playing at home versus being away does sway performance on your side, and that's the reality of it. It's human instinct that we prefer playing in places we're familiar with. On the basis of that, it's going to be a very, very difficult game for both teams, because of the quality of opposition that La Rochelle have in Leinster, but the fact that, you know, La Rochelle is one of the more difficult places now to go and play in France, an impressive home record to boast of. It's going to be really, really difficult. So, and the quality that they're playing, and the variety and diversity to their game as well, where it's, you know, mauling, but also great counterattack. Guys with lots of experience in, you know, 8, 9, 10, and Doolan at 15. Will Skelton bashing people up front. Like, you know, there's so many really great components to this La Rochelle team that, you know, Leinster will definitely have to churn out one of their better performances of the season to get the better of them. So I think it's probably just on the basis of experience at this level of competition, I think it's just Leinster favourites, but I don't think there's a huge amount in it.
Well, given the way Leinster played against Exeter, that performance at Sandy Park is right up there with the best Leinster performances, even going back to the teams that you were involved with, Brian. Like, incredible control against the team who had just won the European Cup and the English Premiership the year before. Leinster went to Sandy Park, they lost their captain during the game, didn't seem to affect them, and they put in an incredibly professional performance.
I do think if Leinster play similarly to how they played in Sandy Park, they will win the game. Such was the impressiveness of that 65 minutes. Obviously, they conceded, even 70 minutes, they conceded two scores within 8 or 9 minutes. But the manner in which there was no panic, they turned it around, they lost their 10, and Ross Byrne came in, and the way he pulled the strings, but just the leadership littered throughout the team. People really stepped up when it was needed. The intensity that they brought to the game, the physicality, was felt at a different level. It felt almost test-like. And it was funny, you know, I was pulling out of the stadium in Sandy Park about 25 minutes after the game, and Stuart Hogg pulled out in his car right beside us. And anyway, we pulled up to the same lights just before getting onto the motorway, and I rolled down the window, and Hoggy rolled his window down, just said, "Oh, hard luck, you know, tough game." And he just shaked his head and said, "They are just some team." And so when the European champions are saying that, you know that you saw a really, really great performance from you know, what has to be one of the real top favourites in the tournament. But it's semi-final time, you know, you're playing away from home and all bets are off. And if La Rochelle can churn out their best performance of the season and Leinster don't manage to deliver, well, they'll win.
What about Ulster, Brian? I mean, I'm sure, firstly, they'll be disappointed with the nature of how they lost against Connacht, because they really should have won that game. They were in a commanding position. They let Connacht back into it. And then they wouldn't have wanted to go into Europe this week on the back of a defeat. But it's another Anglo-Irish challenge for them. But I look at that Ulster team, and I really think they're proper contenders to win this competition, the Challenge Cup.
They definitely are, Will, absolutely. And Ulster, I have to say, I've been impressed with them this season. They've gone about their business. They've played some really great rugby at times, scored some cracking tries. They were unfortunate. They came up against a really great Toulouse team in round one of Europe up in the Kingspan, and they turned them over. And we just saw some brilliance from Colby and Antoine Dupont. That's the difference between lots of teams in Europe and Toulouse is, you know, you just have game breakers. So I have to say I've liked watching Ulster. I think they're going in the right direction, and they're improving kind of month by month. I also like some of their young guys coming through. I think this guy Moore in the centre is a nice player. The combination of Hume and Moore, Stuart Moore, looks really good. He looks as though he's a nice passing game. He's abrasive. He can carry advantage line. He's in for the fight. I think they look as though some of their academy is starting to come through. Look as though they can really, you know, fill the jersey. So I think it'll be another close one in it's in Welford Road, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, it's Friday night.
I think it'll be a close one. Again, I think Leicester have a bit more of their bite back in them, albeit they lost at the weekend in a close one. I do feel as though that Ulster have nothing to worry about. Even with a slightly resurgent Leicester, I do feel as though that Ulster have the firepower to go over there and turn them over. So I fancy them to go and do that.
How much of a loss is not having Geordie Murphy as we expect this weekend for Ulster? He looks like he's going to miss the game on Friday.
Yeah, well, you know, is any team that's going to be minus Marcel Coetzee and then another important experienced player in Geordie Murphy? But in fairness, you look at Matthew Ray, you look at, you know, Timoney at the weekend with some of his runs. Reedy, I think, was very good at times. So they do have some good quality strength, but it's starting to thin out a little bit. But Geordie Murphy just has, you know, the cunning and the know-how of circumstance situations, even, you know, the cleverness around rooks, of holding people in, of running blocker lines, the small little things that takes you, you know, 10 years to develop. Those things can be game breakers and game winners when it comes to this level. So and, you know, he's as hard as tough as old boots. So, you know, you want that against the fight that Leicester are going to put to Ulster. So he is a loss, no doubt. But at the same time, I think there's some good quality operators that are able to come in and fill in instead of them.
We were chatting to Amy Lee Murphy-Crow in the last hour. She'd taken like a duck to water to 15 so far, you know, two tries in her first start against Italy at the weekend. What did you make of that performance at Energia Park, given that there's a bit of pressure on Ireland after the way they had played the week before against France and shipping 50 points?
Yeah, well, first of all, they won, right? I think that was the important part about trying to get third, and they felt as though that's where they wanted to be. I think there's a realization that there's a big gulf between England, France, and everybody else. So who's going to get to third? Also, with the knowledge that they'll be playing Italy later on in the year in a World Cup qualifier, I think that was it was important to try and get one over on them and just remind them that physically they're more imposing, and you know, they managed to outscore them. Was it three tries to one?
Four to one. They got one right at the
end.
Four to one.
They did. Yeah. So I think what's frustrating about it was, you know, it's difficult sometimes to get into a game as a spectator when there are as many handling errors as there were, and there were, you know, I won't go into the numbers of it, but they were significant numbers. So to get any fluidity, to get any momentum in games, you need to put passages of play together. And when there's that many handling errors, you just simply can't do it. And so it must have felt very disjointed to play in, because it felt disjointed watching. But they got what was important. They got to see Stacey Flood at 10, you know, pulling the strings. They got another big performance from Dorothy Wall at 6, who obviously got over the try line, but you know, put in a kind of a dominant performance for a 20-year-old. So I think, and then Amy Lee Murphy Crowe as well, getting a couple of scores. These are all confidence builders for later on the year. This was important. What's more important is the World Cup qualifier, to make sure that we are down in New Zealand next year.
And the hope would be as well, Brian, from what we've seen so far, I know it's only 3 games to judge on, but Ireland should be very hopeful of beating Spain and Italy at the end of the year and getting to New Zealand next summer.
Yeah, they should be. But, you know, it's funny, World Cup qualifiers, there's obviously an added pressure where you know that there's a tangible reward at the end of it. And you know, they weren't playing for a trophy at the weekend, but they were playing for third place. But there's something much bigger than playing for third place later on in the year. You would be hopeful that looking at the performance of the weekend, that they will beat Italy. That said, I watched some of Italy against Scotland the previous week, and they were miles better. And maybe Scotland aren't the team that Ireland are, but they were considerably better than they were against us. They couldn't put any kind of passage of play together. You know, when you have 29 handling errors, it's very difficult to get over the try line with that many handling errors, than you know you would ever be willing to deal with. So they will look at that and be very annoyed with their performance, and as a result they'll go away and have a rethink and look at how they can counter Ireland when the game does take place later on in the year.
Well, huge weekend of European rugby coming up. We'll be building forward to it all week on Off the Ball. A particular focus on the Challenge Cup semi-final on Friday, Leicester against Ulster, and then Leinster's trip to La Rochelle on Sunday in the Heineken Champions Cup. Brian, thanks a million for joining us this evening.
Good man. Cheers. Well, bye.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
The OTB Podcast Network.